Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai Pesach Ben Dov Meir Ben Yecheskel and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, Baruch Hashem, thank God, this has been a very good week for our Hebrew movement. We have done so far 2 full days of advertising on Facebook for our main Hebrew page. Our main Hebrew page is the page of Hayamin HaAmiti. Hayamin HaAmiti means the real right. That's the name of JTF's movement in Israel. And we did 1 full day of advertising in the middle of last week and 1 full day of advertising today, Sunday, Israel time Sunday. And as of Sunday night, as of the time that I am doing this program, here are the results after 2 full days of Facebook advertising. We had 1,830 likes before we started the advertising campaign. Now, let's understand something. Likes on Facebook is, in effect, members. People who like our page receive all our messages, receive every new post that is put up by our great Hebrew admins. Our Hebrew admins put up usually 3 or 4 posts every day. It's a very active, very, very active Facebook page, and that's why it's so successful. But we had 1,830 members, in effect, or likes, before we started the latest advertising campaign. Now, after 2 full days of Facebook ads, we have 2,205 likes. Baruch Hashem, thank God. 2,205 from 1,830. What is that? That's 374 more likes, or 375 more likes. That's a 20% increase in our membership in just 2 days of advertising. 20% increase. We're now beginning, by the way, a new campaign starting right now of 4 more days of advertising. We're going to have this week, God willing, we're going to have 4 more days of advertising on Facebook. But so far, we've gotten 20% more members and tremendous new interest and activism on the site. It took us 2 years of hard work. It actually took our great Hebrew admins 2 years of hard work to get 1,830 likes. Now in 2 days, we increased that by 20%. Now, let's just give you another indication of how that actually affects things in a practical way, how people see things and what that means. You've seen our cartoons. You've seen that the great Shlomo has done 4 brilliant cartoons. Shlomo is so talented. He just started. He never did this before. He just started doing cartoons, just like when he started with the videos. Out of nowhere, he learned how to do the videos. Shlomo is just a genius. Anyway, he did 4 cartoons, Shlomo, so far. The cartoons were in Hebrew and in English. But we're going to speak about the Hebrew movement right now, because that's where the huge impact has been. Our cartoons are getting thousands of views just on the Hebrew page alone. For example, you remember the 4th cartoon that we did was on Tag Mechir. We already have, if you look at the bottom of the cartoon on the page, we already have 4,968 views on that cartoon, Baruch Hashem. That's almost 5,000 views just on one Hebrew Facebook page. Almost 5,000 Israeli Jews have seen that cartoon. By the way, almost all of our members on our Hebrew Facebook page are Hebrew-speaking Israeli Jews. All of our advertising is only limited to Israel. Only Israeli Jews, Hebrew-speaking Israeli Jews, receive our advertising. You're able to limit it in Facebook ad campaigns. So they're the only ones who see our advertising. So our new members and the people coming are almost exclusively Israeli Jews. So thousands of people, thousands of Israeli Jews are seeing our daily messages. Hundreds of new Israeli Jews are joining us every week, Baruch Hashem. I mean, this is impressive. Of course, there's no guarantee we'll continue to get these types of results. You know, when you're advertising, sometimes a campaign works well for 2 days and then doesn't work well afterwards, God forbid, I don't know. I hope it continues to work well until we become a huge movement. I hope that happens. But there's no guarantee. But so far, the results are very, very good. Of course, if we find that the results stop being so good, if it stops being as effective, because sometimes campaigns are effective for a while and are no longer effective after a certain amount of time. If that happens, we're going to change course and we'll do something different. We'll do a different type of campaign or a different type of advertising. Maybe it'll be advertising on Facebook, but we'll change the ads on Facebook. But the point is, so far, we're getting very encouraging results. Thousands of people seeing our daily messages, thousands of Israeli Jews, hundreds of new Israeli Jews joining us every week. I mean, if we continue at this pace, God willing, we'd become a much larger movement. It'll take a year or two, but we'll become a larger movement, much larger. Of course, we want to do much better than this, much better, because we don't have time. Israel's in a lot of trouble. We've got to wake people up as fast as possible. But all of this proves that money has been our big problem. If only we had the money to do a major advertising, as I've always said, if we had a multi-million dollar budget, you give me a multi-million dollar budget in 1 year, I'll give you a mass movement that will change Jewish history. I think that this is proving that. Money has always been the problem. That's our main problem. Our goal is going to be to advertise 5 days a week. We want to be able to advertise every week, 5 days a week. I don't know if we'll be able to afford that, but that's our goal, to advertise 5 days a week, excluding Friday and Shabbat. We don't want to advertise on Friday because that's a slower day in Israel, because it's coming close to the Sabbath, and Friday night already is the Sabbath. And on Shabbat, on the Sabbath, we don't want to advertise. But the other 5 days a week, from Sunday to Thursday, we want to have our ads running. How much advertising? Facebook, of course, gives us the option of choosing how much we want to advertise, how many people we want to reach every day. And that depends on how much money we raise. How many people we reach will depend on how much money we raise. I'll give you some other little news. Big Israeli television reporters have joined our Hebrew Facebook page. They've joined it because they're monitoring us now. They see something happening, and it concerns them. They're leftists, of course. They're extreme leftists. But big Israeli TV reporters are members of our Hebrew Facebook page. And so, I think it's clear what our challenge is. First of all, before I say anything else, I just want to thank our great Hebrew administrators, the great Hebrew administrators on our forums and on our Hebrew Facebook page. For 2 years, they worked relentlessly to build up our likes and to build up that Facebook page. They worked relentlessly. Of course, no one in Israel receives any salary. They don't receive a single penny from us. They do all of this on their own time, spend hours every day working and putting articles and putting information and videos. And every time we did something, on one of our sites, they put it up on the Hebrew page to inform Israeli Jews about it, and then went all around Facebook trying to spread the word. They got us 1,830 people. It took them 2 years of hard work with no money and no budget. God bless our Hebrew admins. Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. May the memory of this saint be immortalized. May God avenge his blood. Rabbi Kahana, the greatest Jewish leader in modern history, would be very proud of our Hebrew admins and would be very proud of our Hebrew Facebook page promoting his ideology and his philosophy and what he, our teacher and our rabbi, what he taught us. He'd be very proud. And I'm sure he's looking down from heaven with satisfaction now, seeing what his followers, who weren't even born when he was doing what he was doing, they weren't even born then, but they're promoting the truth that he told and that the evil, self-hating Jews tried to smother and tried to eliminate, and the Arab terrorists from Al-Qaeda murdered him. That truth is not being smothered. That truth is being spread, Baruch Hashem. God bless our great Hebrew admins. And God bless the wonderful JTFers on our English forum and in our English movement that made this latest advertising campaign possible, that have sent us the financial support to make this possible. You know that we have Shlomo is the only person on staff that we have to give him a salary. He has to survive. And believe me, he gets much less than he was getting. He was getting a lot of money in a major, working as a technical expert in a major computer corporation, and he worked for major computer corporations in the past, like Microsoft. So he was getting a big salary. He gave that up. He gets only a fraction of what he used to get working for JTF. But we need him to make everything we're doing successful. And we need, of course, the support of our great JTFers. You might ask, well, where does the English movement come in on all of this? Because I'm only speaking about the Hebrew movement. Well, of course, as I've always said, if the Hebrew movement becomes a mass movement in Israel, God willing, if that ever happens, then the English movement will also grow and will also be heavily influenced by that. But there would not be a successful Hebrew movement, or it would be much less successful, if, God forbid, we didn't have the English movement. The English movement is where we raise the funds and where we have the backup and support that we need to make the Hebrew movement possible. So the English movement is very, very important to us. That's why we spend time giving you a good, what I think is an excellent English forum, and we give you these programs every week, and we've done literally a couple of thousand videos in English because it's very important. The Hebrew movement cannot succeed without the English movement. We need the help of the English movement to succeed. And so our goal is to advertise 5 days a week, except for the 2 days we don't want to advertise is Friday and Shabbat and Saturday. How much we advertise depends on how much we raise. That's our goal. I don't know if we're going to have enough money. I hope we will, God willing. But I think you can see that with this, we have the potential to reach a lot of people, especially young Israeli Jews, influence them, change the way they think. This is a mass education campaign. And it can influence from the bottom up. We can influence things. I remember one time when Rabbi Meir Kahana was going to Israel, and we were going to leave him off at the airport. We left him off. We brought him, the JDL guys brought him to the airport. And the Israeli El Al people assumed that he was on the first class flight, that he was going to go on first class, because they knew he was a famous person, but he wasn't. He was traveling tourist class. And so he was waiting online on first class. People saw him. Nobody said hello. Nobody said, all the wealthy, you know, influential Jews in Israel, the elitist Jews that were going first class, they looked at him. Nobody said anything to him. Then they saw Abba Ibn come. He was an extreme leftist who wanted Israel to commit national suicide. Abba Ibn came. They all went up to him and they wanted his autograph. They all ran up to him. But Rabbi Kahana, they didn't care about. That was in first class. Then all of a sudden, one of the El Al personnel comes and says, oh, Rabbi, we made a mistake here. You're actually in tourist class. So we walked over with him to tourist class. When he went to tourist class, people surrounded him. All the average, ordinary, working class Israeli Jews surrounded him. They kissed his hand, which is a Sephardic Jewish custom. They kissed his hand. A couple of them had tears in their eyes. They blessed him. They surrounded him. They asked him to bless them. They said, please give us a blessing. Because to them, correctly, they view him as a great rabbi. They loved him. And then someone in the crowd also said, I heard two of them speaking, and one of them in the crowd said, wow, I never expected to see Rabbi Kahana traveling with us. What a great honor. And then the other one said, oh, you know, Abba Ibn is also here. And the other guy just shrugged his shoulders. Abba Ibn, big deal. Nobody in the tourist class was interested in Abba Ibn, the leftist, the prominent leftist that the media promoted. Nobody cared about him. The people in the tourist class loved Rabbi Kahana. The people in first class, the wealthy, elitist Jews, wanted Abba Ibn, the leftist. And Rabbi Kahana turned to me then and said to me, Rabbi Kahana always had the most profound statements that he would make. Rabbi Kahana said to me then, you see, Chaim, our salvation will come from the back of the bus. And that is true. The salvation of the Jewish people in Israel will come from the bottom up, will come from the average ordinary Jews who instinctively know that it's insane to give up Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and create a so-called Palestine state. They instinctively know there are no Palestinians, and they instinctively know that this is national suicide. They instinctively know you don't go back to borders that are 6 to 9 miles wide. They instinctively know that God gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. And even if they're not religious and don't understand the biblical reasons, they know that it's a matter of survival. That they know intuitively. And if they don't know it fully yet, at least they have thoughts in that direction and we can educate them and develop their normal thinking. We must reach those Jews in the tourist class. Those are the Jews we've got to reach. The Jews that work for a living every day and are trying to raise families and serve in the Israeli army. Or if they're religious, they study in yeshivas, some of them. Some of them study in yeshivas, some of them study in yeshiva and serve in the Israeli army. We've got to reach those people. We've got to reach them and tell them there is an answer, there is a solution. We can turn the situation around. We can save Israel. We can defeat the self-hating leadership, the weak, traitorous, capitulating leadership of Israel. And we can recreate the great days that existed in the Six-Day War and other miraculous times in Israel. We can recreate that. We can do that again, even and create it even in a greater way. We've got to reach them with that message, the message of truth. If we do that, if we reach all of them, and we bring enough of them into the movement, we will change Jewish history and we will save the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And what greater mission could there be in this world than that? Than saving God's Zionist enterprise? And so, we need your help to make a difference. When you see cartoons from Shlomo, when you see us bring something on the forum like cartoons from Shlomo, please like the cartoons on Facebook. Comment on them, share them on your Facebook page. We do the cartoons in both languages, if you'll notice. We do it in Hebrew and in English. Now, the Hebrew, true, the Hebrew ones are getting much more, are getting a much greater view, are getting far more views and are getting far more likes and far more, and are being spread far more effectively right now. But the English ones are also important because we need an English strong English language movement to support the Hebrew language movement. So please like, comment, share when you see the cartoons from Shlomo. Also, put good posts and good threads on our Facebook pages and on our forum. That will attract new people to our movement. And last but not least, money is our downfall. We need as much financial support as we can get. The more money we have, the more people we will reach. It's as simple as that. Simple arithmetic. So we need everybody that can help us to chip in. Checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box. Every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a difference. There are several people who give us more than they can afford sometimes. And sometimes I got into arguments with them and urge them not to give us any more. And those people who are listening to the show know who I'm talking about. There are several people. There are at least 3 or 4 JTFers I could think of right now who give us more than they can, who have given us over the years more than they can afford. And I've gotten into arguments with them telling them, please don't send us any more because as much as we need the money, I don't want people giving more than they can afford. But there also are people in our movement who are good Jews and good righteous Gentiles, but they haven't helped yet. Now's the time. This is a very important blessed deed to help us with this. If you want to send checks, money orders or cash donations to the post office box, that's excellent. That's very helpful. Or if you prefer to donate with your credit card online, that's just as good. Makes no difference to us. Makes no difference whether you do it one way or the other. Except, remember now that if you want to donate, you can only do it on the Hebrew main page. You have to go to hayamin.org, and on top there's a donate button in English. It's all in English. You just click on the donate button in English. The reason the donate button on the English main page doesn't work anymore is because the company, which was called WePay, they changed their business. They're not doing that business anymore. They got out of that business. Why they did that, I don't know. They were very good with us. You know, they helped us. I mean, we used to get donations there, and it was good for us. But unfortunately, they did that. So the donate button does not work anymore on the English main page. It only works on the Hebrew main page. You got to go to the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and do the donate button there. Thanks again to our great JTFers and to the great Hebrew admins. Every Jew in Israel that you reach and that you change, you could be saving their soul by doing this. By reaching them and telling them the truth and making them loyal to God's plan for the land of Israel. You're doing a lot of good. God bless you. God bless your families and your loved ones in this world and in the next. Okay, now, I'm going to be reporting on a regular basis on the forum, God willing. You know, when we get more results, I, of course, will try to fill you in on the forum as much as possible. And you can always check and see what our likes are. And you can see, even though it's in Hebrew, but you know where everything is. So I think you can pretty much see what it is. Or you can ask if you want to go to the Hebrew Facebook page, and you'll see yourself what's going on there whenever you want to check. It's always good to check. Terrific. I'm God willing. Oh, I hope Hashem continues to give us success, and I hope we eventually get tens of thousands and eventually hundreds of thousands of people involved. If that happens, we will change Jewish history, God willing. That's going to take time, but God willing, I hope we'll be able to do that. All right. Now let's go to our great questions from our great JTFers, and we start off with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on Boris Karloff?" Unquote. I think he was a very talented and gifted actor. He was a very, very gifted actor. He was, I thought he was excellent in the roles that he played. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Yamash Moda John Kerry, who writes, and I quote, "One, discuss Dana International," unquote. Dana International is an Israeli so-called pop singer who had a sex change operation. This was someone who was born a man and decided to have the sex change operation. So this is a very sick person. And this very sick person is promoted relentlessly by Israel's evil news media and the evil Israeli establishment. This is the type of pervert that represents Israel in the Eurovision contests. You know, they have Eurovision singing contests. Who represents Israel? This very sick person who, you know, who had a sex change operation and who advocates all the perversions and all the sick things, all the abominations that the Bible warns us against. Just absolutely, absolutely horrific and terrible. It's sad and it's disgraceful. And it's scandalous. Yamach Shmoda John Kerry now writes, 2, Queen Noor of Jordan, American who became Muslim and married King Hussein, whose second wife was British convert to Islam, unquote. Yes, you pretty much said it all. She was an American, and she converted to Islam in order to marry this evil King Hussein. And she, of course, she made an anti-Semitic and anti-Israel statements all her life, that we know. And, you know, she decided to join this Islamic monarchy, which is quite disgusting. And by the way, it's interesting that many of these Muslim kings and Muslim dictators, they want American wives. That's interesting. They don't want Arab wives, a lot of them. Thank you, Yimash Shmo, to John Kerry. And now we go to our great friend, DGR81, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. I've always admired the way you speak. What is your educational background?" Unquote. My educational background is not that impressive. If you're looking for formal diplomas and graduation from universities, after I graduated high school, I went to New York University at the age of 16 on a special admissions program. I skipped my senior year of high school and went at the age of 16 to NYU. But when I was in NYU, I got so involved with JDL and with our activities on behalf of Soviet Jewry that eventually I had to drop out because I was in and out of prisons and courtrooms and involved with all types of underground activities. I couldn't do that and at the same time continue to take the college courses. And so I wound up dropping out of college. So my educational background is that of a college dropout who did not complete the studies because I felt that our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union were facing an emergency crisis, and I felt that something had to be done, and I devoted my life, my teenage years, to trying to keep that issue alive. Thank you, DGR. And we now go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, your thoughts on that missing plane from Malaysia," unquote. Well, you know, I don't know exactly what happened. It's obviously looks very suspicious and very strange that the flight path was changed so drastically. I don't know what happened. But I think one of the lessons in this is that you don't fly airlines like those of Malaysia and other third world countries. And Malaysia is a country with many Muslims. So I think people have to be crazy to fly those airlines. Most of the passengers on the flight were Chinese. They were headed toward China. And I know that a lot of these airlines are cheaper sometimes than the airlines from other countries, but it's very dangerous flying with these third world airlines. You never know what's going to happen. It's just my little thought that I've never heard anybody actually bring up, but I would hope that people would learn the lesson. You don't fly airlines in third world countries. And I also think that it's foolish to visit third world countries. You can't trust the authorities there. You can't trust the population there. Anything can happen to you. Dr. Dan now writes, "Two, do you think Russia is going to arm America's enemies with nukes?" Oh, yeah, they are already, unquote. Well, Dr. Dan, you answered the question yourself. You know that they're doing it with Iran. They are arming America's enemies with nukes. And Vladimir Putin hates this country, despises this country. And he hates and despises Israel and despises the Jewish people. That's just a reality that we're dealing with. The one thing that people don't mention, though, about Russia, they're trying to make Putin into some sort of Superman because Obama's so weak compared to him. It almost seems like that sometimes. But the fact is, Russia itself, internally, structurally, is very weak. In fact, the Russian economy survives only on natural gas and oil sales, basically on natural gas sales to Western Europe. That's how the Russian economy survives. If not for that, Russia would have nothing. Russia's economy would be collapsing. There is no internal stability in Russia's economy. So all of this is just a bluff, like it was when you had the Soviet Empire. Internally, the Soviet Empire was always on the verge of economic collapse, and that's true today with Russia. If we had a strong American president, that strong American president could deal with Putin, knowing that he's very vulnerable if there was really a strong leader facing him and real sanctions that he was facing. But unfortunately, instead of a strong leader, we have a traitor, a Muslim traitor in the White House who enables all the evil people, all the dictators of the world to do whatever they want. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we now go to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Please explain why Jordan should be part of Israel," unquote. Because God gave all of that land to the Jewish people as an eternal inheritance. It says in the Bible, it says in the Torah. God gives us all the land from the great river in Egypt, which you can interpret to be the Nile, or you can interpret it to be Wadi al-Arish in the Sinai. Either one, some of the poskim, some of Chazal, some of the great rabbis say that it's Wadi al-Arish. Most of them say it's the Nile, that it's the Nile in Egypt. But we're promised from the great river in Egypt to the Euphrates. Euphrates is in the middle of Iraq. All of that is supposed to be part of the land of Israel. That includes the entire artificial nation that they call Jordan nowadays. That is all part of the land of Israel. God created all of these lands. God created the whole world. And God decided that this land should be given to the Jewish people. This is God's plan. And so our aspiration has to be to eventually liberate all of the land of Israel. Liberating all of the land of Israel is part of the process of Ge'ula, of redemption. This is what Harambam, Maimonides, and all of the great Jewish scholars have taught us and have proven to us through their brilliant analysis of the Torah and of the biblical promises. There's no question that God wants and expects us to liberate the land of Israel, and that is an essential process of bringing redemption to the world. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And by the way, I'm not saying that we're going to start a war so that we can annex Jordan. But I am saying that if Jordan starts a war with Israel, that Israel should take as much land as they could and make it part of Israel. When the Arabs start with Israel, I'm not saying Israel should go launch wars in order to liberate more land. But when Israel is under attack from the Arab Nazis, they should seize land in order to defend themselves, and they should annex that land to the state of Israel and begin the process of liberating as much of the land of Israel as possible. Absolutely. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we now go to our great friend Lewinsky Stinks. Dr. Brennan rocks. And I quote, "Small corrections. Anne Barnhart is actually a very devout and traditionalist Catholic, and John Leibowitz is John Stewart," unquote. Well, actually, those are not small corrections. They're major corrections, and I thank you, Lewinsky Stinks, for making those corrections. I assumed that Anne Barnhart was an evangelical Christian because she is so pro-Israel. She's always defending Israel and the Jews. And usually the people that do that are evangelical Christians. Usually she identified herself. I remember seeing her say that she's a Christian and that she's a strong supporter of Israel, and she always defends Israel and says that every moral person has to defend Israel. So I assume when someone says they're a Christian and they're defending Israel, I assume that's an evangelical Christian, because most people who say that they're Christian and they defend Israel are usually evangelicals. But it's very interesting. She's a devout and traditionalist Catholic, and she's a very strong defender of Israel. That's very interesting. I think she's a very righteous person. Very righteous. Now, John Leibowitz, that's interesting now that you're mentioning it, I remember that John Stewart's original name was John Leibowitz. Yes, John Leibowitz, actually, with a V. John Leibowitz. Yes, now I'm remembering that. But Lewinsky Stinks, just to show you what an interesting world this is, and why I answered the question differently, there is a John Leibowitz with the same exact name. There is a John Leibowitz who was chairman of the Federal Trade Commission and is a major Obama supporter, major supporter of Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and all the evil, vile left-wing Democrats. John Leibowitz is very active in the Democrat Party. Obama appointed him to be chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, which is a huge position, a major position. Leibowitz is, and again, this is not John Stewart. This is a different John Leibowitz with the same name. John Leibovitz is also married to Ruth Marcus, who is the hideous columnist for the Washington Post, a disgusting, self-hating Jewish woman who writes for the Washington Post and defends all the enemies of her own people, defends Obama, Clinton, all the vicious Jew haters she defends, even though she herself is Jewish. A typical self-hating mental case. That's his wife. So there is another John Leibovitz with the same exact name. But now that you mention it, I do recall, yes, I do recall that John Stewart's original name was John Leibovitz. John, by the way, just to answer your question, John Stewart is the ultimate self-hating Jew. He devotes his entire show to defending the worst enemies of his own people. Obama, Hillary Clinton, all the enemies of his own people he defends. And mocks and ridicules and attacks the friends of the Jewish people like Ted Cruz. When we have some friends, when we have evangelical Christians or Tea Party people or people on the right that defend Israel and defend the Jewish people, this pig, John Stewart, spends his whole program attacking, ridiculing, and making fun of them. So he's a degenerate pig. Anyway, let's move on here. Lewinsky Stinks also writes, please discuss Hobby Lobby. Is this a righteous or an evil corporation? Mark Green, the scion of the Hobby Lobby, CEO, produces Nazi movies against Israel, unquote. You're absolutely right. obviously, it's an evil corporation. We assume nowadays so many evangelicals are friendly and are supportive of Israel that we assume all of them are, and that's just not true. As you have often pointed out, Lewinsky Stinks, you've done a very good job in reporting this on our forum. You've pointed it out many times. There are also people who call themselves evangelical Christians who are anti-Semites. And this piece of garbage, Mark Green and the whole Green family, who are the founders of Hobby Lobby, they are anti-Israel and anti-Jewish. And he produced at least one movie that I know of. I didn't know that he produced more than one, but he produced at least one that I know of, where he accuses Israel of apartheid and being a racist country, and defends the Arab Nazis, defends the Muslim Nazis. The producer of his movie, by the way, actually met with, I'm sorry, the director of his movie, actually met with and interviewed Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, who says every non-Muslim in the world should be killed, should be slaughtered. And Nasrallah, the head of the Sheikh Nasrallah, the head of the Hezbollah terrorist organization, that Mark Green likes. They thought they praised him. They praised Nasrallah. They thought he was a great guy. But Israel is terrible. This is an evil piece of subhuman garbage. And Hobby Lobby should be boycotted. As a New Yorker, I've never seen Hobby Lobby. I don't think they have branches in the Northeast. At least not in New York. But it is, for those who don't know, for those of us who live in the Northeast, Hobby Lobby is actually a very big chain. And the Green family is worth billions of dollars. They are multi-billionaires, and they use their money for evil causes. They are evil people, and they use their money for evil causes. They are actually evangelical. They call themselves evangelical Christians. They play evangelical music and in their stores, but they're anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. So they do a lot of harm to the cause of the Jewish people, to the cause of evangelicals. They do a lot of harm when they do that. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. Very good point, as always. You always bring up the most important points here. And we now go to the great LKZ. God bless LKZ. LKZ does a lot to help us. God bless him. LKZ writes, and I quote, Shalom, are traitors that burn the Israeli flag making Chilul Hashem, are they Rotfim? In plural we say Rotfim, which means pursuers of Jewish blood. Unquote. Well, they certainly are endangering Jewish lives. I have to be a little careful about using the term Rotfim, LKZ, because in Israel it's actually illegal in some cases to call somebody a Rodef, because under Jewish law you're supposed to kill a Rodef. Because a Rodef is someone who is actively trying to kill Jews, and the Jewish law requires we kill them. So there's a legal issue there. I have to be a little careful about actually saying they're Rotfim, but they are endangering, I can say, they endanger Jewish lives, and they're traitors to the Jewish people. There's no question about it. No question about that. And by the way, I'm saying this as someone who would like to, I'd like to change the Israeli flag. I'd like to make it more Jewish. I think having just one Magen David, just one Star of David, and the way it's, I don't know. I'm open to suggestions about making it more Jewish, the Israeli flag, just like I'd like to change the Israeli national anthem, Hatikva, to include words where we thank Hashem, where we thank God for giving us the land of Israel. I'd like to change that too. But right now, the flag of Israel is the Israeli flag. And to burn that flag is despicable. It's disgraceful. And people who are doing that are making a statement that is a terrible statement. Someone who calls himself religious and does that, that's a very sick person. That's very sick behavior. And LKZ now writes, if Dems win in 16, what will New York be like for Jews, unquote. I think New York is already a nightmare for Jews. You know that they don't pick up the garbage in Jewish neighborhoods. They ticket Jews. These Muslim, all the meter maids are Muslims and blacks who run around deliberately giving tickets to Jews. They never give tickets, by the way, to black people in black neighborhoods. They don't go to the Muslim neighborhoods in New York. There are a lot of Muslims now in New York. They don't ticket the Muslims. They don't ticket the blacks. New York's already a nightmare for Jews. This is an anti-Semitic city. All the mayors, Bloomberg, de Blasio, they put all the anti-Semites, they give them all the jobs, all the Muslim anti-Semites, Pakistanis, Arabs, blacks, all Jew haters, they give them all the jobs. You know, they have a rating system that Bloomberg started when Mike Bloomberg was mayor. He started a rating system for restaurants to rate how sanitary and how clean the restaurants are. And every restaurant, of course, wants an A rating. If you don't get an A rating, you lose customers. The cleanest Jewish restaurants, I mean, restaurants that you could eat off the floor, the cleanest, most beautiful, most elegant Jewish restaurants get B's from these Muslim inspectors who come. They'll give them a B. They won't give them an A. But if you go to a slop house, a Muslim slop house in Brooklyn, the dirtiest, nastiest place with flies all over the place and flies in the food even, that they get it, they get an A automatically. Schwarzer places, Schwarzer slop houses that smell, that literally smell on Liberty Avenue and Jamaica Avenue in Queens, they get an A. I mean, because who's giving them the ratings? Their bros are giving them the ratings. That's what New York is like for Jews. This is an anti-Semitic, anti-white city. It's a sick city, and it's only going to get worse. If the Democrats win in 2016, not just New York, America will be a nightmare for Jews and for any decent person. I mean, when Democrats are in charge, it's a nightmare. It's just a nightmare. Thank you, LKZ. And we now go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Lev Tahor?" unquote. Lev Tahor means pure heart. But unfortunately, this Satmar Hasidic cult is anything but a group of individuals of pure hearts. They're sick, hateful, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic people. I mean, these are so-called religious Jews who are the worst anti-Semites you could find. They want to destroy Israel. They hate Israel. They curse all the Jews in Israel. I mean, just a sick group. This guy, the cult leader of Lev Tahor, and it's a Satmar cult. It's part of Satmar. It's not, he was Satmar. I don't know if he's still associated with them, but he was running a place in Israel. He got into trouble there and then ran off to the United States. They were in Borough Park in Brooklyn. I remember when they were in Borough Park in Brooklyn. He got into trouble here and actually went to prison for all the shenanigans they were pulling over here. And then they fled to Canada, and now they're in Canada. A sick group of people, just a sick group of people. And now Tag Mechir writes, is it Asur? Asur means forbidden. Is it asur to be part of minyan with satmarim and or other chasidim, charedim, if they are anti-Israel openly at least, unquote. If they are openly committed to destroying Israel and if they are working to hurt their fellow Jews. I'm not talking about Jewish traitors. I mean, if you want to bring down the Israeli government, that's appropriate. The Israeli government is very bad. But if you hate the state of Israel and the Jewish people and you're fighting to hurt your fellow Jews as a whole, the Jewish people as a whole in the land of Israel, that is treason. You're not allowed to hurt your fellow Jews. You're not allowed to try to bring down a Jewish state and a Jewish homeland. And work and go to demonstrations with Arabs and Muslims where they burn Israeli flags and put swastikas on the Israeli flag and they say, yes, the Zionists, they're just like the Nazis, the Zionists. Oh, it's terrible, terrible. Oi, oi, oi. They're worse than the Nazis. I mean, these are sick people. I do think they should not be in the minyan. When they're praying, when they're doing the Shemona Esrei and they're praying, they're praying for the destruction of Israel, not praying to bless Israel and bless the Jewish people, which is what you're supposed to, which what you're required to pray, they should not be part of the minyan, in my view. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And by the way, I'm not saying all Satmar. And I'm not saying all Hasidim. Certainly not all Hasidim. Chabad, for instance, are very pro-Israel, and they are good Jews. The Chabad Lubavitcher Jews are good Jews. And you have other Hasidic groups that are good Jews, that love their fellow Jews. Even if we have differences with some of them on some issues, they still love their fellow Jews, they're still good Jews, they're our brothers. They should be part of the Minyan. But sick individuals who want to destroy Israel and who hate anyone who's a Zionist or who wants to return the Jewish people to their homeland. They hate them and they want to cooperate with our enemies to destroy their own people. This type of sickness should not be part of a minyan. Minyan is the, how do you say minyan? Minyan are the 10, are at least 10 Jewish men that are needed in order to have public prayer, in order to have a public prayer. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we now go to our great friend Mansch, who writes, and I quote, the truth, 7 million Ukrainians fought the Nazis, 1.4 million were killed. Most were drafted just as Russians and Jews, 500,000 in Red Army. Hundreds of thousands from Galicia in Ukraine, 1939. Okay, you know, I believe that there were millions of Ukrainians who fought in the Red Army because they were drafted. They didn't have a choice. The vast majority were drafted. Ukrainians do not love Russia and do not want to fight for Russia. The Ukrainians supported Nazi Germany. They supported the Nazis. They wanted the Nazis to win. When the Nazis came to Ukraine, they welcomed them with open arms. They formed Ukrainian Nazi parties and a Ukrainian Nazi government. The women came and the girls, Ukrainian women and the Ukrainian girls came and welcomed them with big black bread that they bake and flowers, and the Ukrainian students had Nazi demonstrations with swastikas at the university. The Ukrainians were pro-Nazi, and the Ukrainians murdered and rounded up hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian Jews. It's a fact, including the notorious mass murder in Babi Yar, where they buried 100,000 Jews or something like that. Buried them alive, most of them. Made them dig their own graves and then threw them in and buried them alive. So we can never forgive and never forget what the Ukrainian Nazis did to the Jews in the Holocaust, and we can never forgive and never forget what Ukrainians did for centuries to the Jews. For centuries they hated the Jews. The Russians also hated the Jews. By the way, I'm not grateful. You mentioned the Red Army. I'm not grateful to the Red Army for defeating the Nazis. They did. It's true the Red Army defeated the Nazis. That's true. But they didn't do it to save the Jewish people. They did it to save themselves, to save Russia, because they were Russian nationalists. The reason Russians fought in the Red Army is because they were Russian nationalists and they didn't want Germany controlling Russia. They didn't do it to save the Jewish people. The Red Army and the Russians were anti-Semitic too. They were also anti-Semitic. The Jews in the Red Army, that's a different story. Now, the Jews in the Red Army were, many of them were fighting to save their own people. Many of them did understand that the Nazis want to exterminate the Jews and they wanted to save Jews from the Holocaust. That's a different story. The Jews in the Red Army, that's another story. They were fighting to save their own people, but the Russians in the Red Army, well, they were doing this because they liked Jews. They were doing it to save Russia, but they also hated the Jews and also wanted to kill Jews. Stalin intended, before he died, Baruch Hashem, Stalin intended to perpetrate a Holocaust against Soviet Jewry. And the Russian people would have enthusiastically participated. So, you know, I'm not grateful. I'm not grateful to Russia. Before Hitler attacked Russia, They had a treaty with Hitler. They signed a treaty with Hitler. They told him, go ahead, you can conquer most of Poland. And they had a treaty with him. That's what started the Holocaust. So I'm going to be grateful to these monsters? I'm not grateful to them. The Jews should get out of there as fast as possible. Out of Ukraine, out of Russia, out of there. Go to the land of Israel. We have a Jewish homeland. You shouldn't be in these Jew-hating countries. They should go to the land of Israel. Thank you, Mensch. And we now go to a new member, Honda88. Welcome to the forum. Honda writes, and I quote, to Noam Federman, are the Passover sacrifices sacrificed near the Mount and attempted on the Mount? Are they real and valid to all Jews? Thank you, unquote. Yes. Well, they're valid that we're trying to reinstate the Passover sacrifice. We're allowed to do the Passover sacrifice before the building of the Holy Temple. You don't need the Holy Temple to be built to do the Passover sacrifice. You don't need Beit HaMikdash, which is the Holy Temple. It doesn't have to be built again to do the Passover sacrifice. There are certain sacrifices, most of the sacrifices have to be done on the Mizbeach, on the altar, when the Holy Temple has been built again. But the Passover sacrifice does not have to. And so, yes, what they're doing is indeed valid and appropriate, and the Jewish people should start the Passover sacrifice again. Thank you, Honda. And we now move on to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, what is the Torah view of non-Jews who aren't anti-Semitic at all, but are totally neutral and indifferent about Israel and the Jewish people, unquote? Well, obviously it's better to be neutral than to be anti-Semitic, obviously. But that's also bad, to be neutral and indifferent about the great moral issue of our day. God says that the fight for Israel and the fight for the Jewish people, God says this in the Bible, is the great moral issue and the great holy issue of all times. This is the issue that concerns God. This is the issue that the whole Bible is and Torah are focused around and center around. So when someone is in this world, the purpose of people are not in this world to be apathetic or indifferent. People are in this world to make a difference, to make this a better world. Why were we put in this world? Just to eat and drink and enjoy ourselves? That's what animals do. We eat. So do dogs and cats and elephants and giraffes. They also eat. So we're like animals. We're just in the world to eat and enjoy ourselves or drink and eat or procreate or have a good time. We were in this world to make this a better world. God put us here for a purpose. Every Jew and every non-Jew has a mission in this world, has a purpose, has a higher calling. No one is allowed to be apathetic. Everyone has to take a stand. Obviously, someone who's indifferent is not going to be punished the way an anti-Semite will be. Obviously, the anti-Semite is much worse. But still, we're supposed to be moral. We're supposed to take a stand. We're supposed to want to make this a better world. We're supposed to care about what's happening in the world. We're supposed to be righteous. And so that's an obligation every human being has. Thank you, E.B. And we now move on to our great friend, Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, do you remember when in 1985, Mayor Good, the first black mayor of Philadelphia, bombed the Move House Schwartz's, burning down a whole block of row houses, unquote? Of course I remember it. Oh, let me answer both questions at the same time. And two, I quote, two, please discuss the black creatures of Move, unquote. Okay. Move was one of these black cult groups. Everyone in the cult adopted the last name Africa.
My name be John Africa. My name be Mubamba Africa. My name be Hawanga Africa.
They're all, every one of them had the name Africa. The men, the women, the children, all called, their last name was Africa. They're so proud of Africa. By the way, if they're so proud of Africa, you know, I remember Rabbi Kahana saying, if they're so proud of Africa, why don't they go there? You know, this way they don't only have to have, they don't have to have only the last name. They can actually live there. It's so wonderful. Africa's so wonderful. And they're always praising Africa. And you know, all the universities and the white intellectuals and all the Schwarzer lovers and the Schwarzers themselves are always telling us how wonderful Africa is. Why don't they go and live there? Believe me, we would be very happy if they all went and lived there. It would make our day. The more the merrier. The more of them that go there, they should buy a one-way ticket on that white man and that white man's invention called an airplane. The ticket is also a white man's invention. Everything civilized was invented by certain groups of people in this world. But they should all go there and fly there and live there. It's so wonderful. Go and live there. But anyway, they all called themselves Africa. And they were, of course, you know, they raped all their women, they abused all their children in the cult, in this cult called Move. This is in the 1980s. And, you know, there were they huge piles of dung, of their dung, was in their backyard with massive flies, so the neighbors started to complain there was a sanitary problem. They would collect the dung and put it in their backyard. And so it smelled like as if you had five homeless, smelly Schwartzes on the E train or on the A train on the subway. It was unbearable, the smell. People in the neighborhood practically had to wear gas masks. And these were Schwartzes in the neighborhood. This was a Schwartzer area. And they couldn't stand it. So the mayor, the black mayor of Philadelphia, Good, I forgot what his first name was. But anyway, he ordered them to leave, and they got court orders, and they ignored everything. You know, they ignored it all. So he bombed their house, burned the house down, and all the houses on the whole block burned down when they did that. All the houses caught fire, all the houses burned down on the whole block. Yes, I remember it. Yes, I remember it well. Such a typical example of the wonderful culture that we're told that we have to worship nowadays, and that, you know, because we worship it, that's why we have Barack Hussein Obama in the White House. Because we worship black culture and worship black people. And so now we have a black president who is also being worshipped. There are people who literally worship Barack Hussein Obama. Oh, how sick, how sick, how sick. Anyway, thank you, Binyamin. And we now go on to the great Dan Ben Noach, the great Dan Ben Noach, our hero, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why don't you become a rabbi while waiting to get to Israel? You would breeze through the studies and it would expand your influence, unquote. It is something to consider, but, you know, I'm very picky about titles, you know, a title like a rabbi. I mean, I think a rabbi has to be very knowledgeable. I don't think I have enough knowledge to be at the standard of a rabbi that I would consider to be the appropriate standard for a rabbi, for smicha. Smicha is the rabbinic ordination. But it's something to consider. It is something to consider, Dan. That is true. It is something to consider. Rabbi Kahana used to say, every Jew should have the knowledge of a rabbi. Even if he himself doesn't become a rabbi, every Jew should have the knowledge of a rabbi. That was something the greatest rabbi that I ever met, Rabbi Kahana, was always fond of saying. Thank you, Dan. And now our other hero, Irish Zionist, writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you remember when you first met Rabbi Meir Kahana? What was it like? Also, please discuss your first JDL mission. God bless you and Israel, unquote. Okay, absolutely, with pleasure. I'll be happy to discuss that. When I first met Rabbi Kahana, I was 14 years old. It was in 1971, and it was the peak of the first JDL campaign to free Soviet Jews. We had two real huge JDL campaigns to free Soviet Jews, one in the early 70s, and then another really big one in the 80s when I was the national chairman. This first campaign, which Rabbi Kahana himself led, took place where there were many demonstrations, for instance, at the Soviet mission to the United Nations. I went to one of the demonstrations because my family was concerned that I didn't think Jewish enough, I wasn't being Jewish enough, so they wanted me to go to a demonstration to get more Jewish influence. So they sent me to a Jewish establishment demonstration. The Jewish establishment started demonstrating to free Soviet Jews in response to the JDL. The JDL pushed Jewish establishment organizations into action. They couldn't ignore the issue of Soviet Jewry anymore. They were so busy fighting for blacks and fighting for all these other disgusting causes, and JDL came along and put the issue of Soviet Jewry on page one again and again and again. They couldn't ignore it anymore. The media was going to them and saying, what are you doing about this? Aren't you a Jewish organization? Aren't you, Soviet Jews are trapped in Russia? What are you doing? So they were forced. They were forced to have demonstrations themselves and to show, no, we're also protesting. This is something JDL accomplished. This is something JDL did. So I went to my family asked me to go to this Jewish establishment demonstration. And we went. The demonstration started on 42nd Street and 5th Avenue at the New York Public Library, and we marched all the way down to the Soviet mission. And at the Soviet mission, Rabbi Kahana was there with several hundred JDL members. And they literally started a riot because the police would not let people demonstrate directly in front of the Soviet mission, and so there was a riot there. And because Rabbi Kahana obviously wanted to publicize the issue of Soviet Jewry, and that was a way to do it. Rioting helped publicize the issue. And I saw the police grab Rabbi Kahana, and I saw them hitting him over the head until he was bleeding, until blood was running down his face. And about five, they separated him from the other JDL people. There were a lot of police there, hundreds of police there. They separated him, and about five of them grabbed him and handcuffed him, and they were beating him on his head until blood was running down his face. And then they picked him up, and he was in handcuffs, and they were leading him away into the truck to be arrested and processed. And as they were leading him away, I saw him with blood running down his face, and the television cameras came to him, ran to him when they saw him being led by the police to the truck. And the cameras asked him for his reaction. What is your reaction to this, Rabbi? What happened here? And he just said, free Soviet Jews, free Soviet Jews, while the blood was running down his face. And when I saw that, that's the first time I ever saw Rabbi Kahana. When I saw that, I said, this is the person whom I would want to be my rabbi. Someone who's willing to go through this type of danger and face this type of difficulty because he loves his fellow Jews, that is who I would respect, and that is who I would want as my rabbi. And after that, I joined the JDL. I remember, by the way, I copied from Rabbi Kahana. I used to copy a lot of things that he did, of course, because he was the greatest. When I was arrested, every time I was arrested and led away, when the cameras would come and the media would come and they'd see me being led away in handcuffs, I would also shout into the camera, free Soviet Jews, free Soviet Jews. I wish we still had the film. There were some people who had the film. When I was being led away after I was finally arrested by the FBI on the bombing charges, when I was being led away and when my co-defendants were being led away, all of us just shouted into the camera, free Soviet Jews. Because we learned this from our great rabbi. And now, Irish Zionist writes, asked me to discuss the first JDL mission. I went down to the JDL headquarters, which was on New Utrecht Avenue in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn. And I wanted to sign up as a member, and Rabbi Kahana was there. He was in the headquarters when I went there. I saw him there. And he looked at me and my friend, both 14-year-old kids, and he told us, come over here. And he said, you know, the police and the FBI know all of us. We want to disrupt Soviet cultural events, because these Soviet cultural events, what happens is people go to these Soviet cultural events, they go to the ballet, or they go to ice skating, Soviet ice skating, or they go to some other Soviet event, and then they say, oh, the Soviets are so cultured, they couldn't be that bad. They couldn't really be persecuting Soviet Jews in Siberia. Look how nicely they dance. Look how cultured they are. Couldn't be. It's impossible. So the Soviet cultural events did harm to the cause of Soviet Jewry. So we wanted to disrupt those Soviet cultural events and let the Soviets know they're not going to be able to get away with this propaganda campaign until Soviet Jews are freed. So the JDL had a policy of disrupting all the Soviet cultural events. But they had a problem. By 1971, they had disrupted quite a few of these events, and the police and the FBI already knew all the main JDL people. So Rabbi Kahana said, you two, you know, he asked how old we were. We told him we're 14 years old. He said, you're so young, nobody will suspect you. You're just too young. Are you willing to go in and do something to free Soviet Jews? And so we said, yes. So they gave us tickets to the Soviet ice follies, the Soviet ice skaters at Madison Square Garden. Soviet ice skaters were performing at Madison Square Garden. And they gave us a backpack to go in, as if we're tourists, with a backpack. And in the backpack was a huge bag of marbles. And we were supposed to spill the marbles on the ice in order to disrupt the Soviet ice skating. Anyway, we went there. We got in. And the rabbi was right. They didn't even check us. They figured 14-year-old kids, they let us right through. They didn't even bother us. They didn't even bother to check. We got in. My 14-year-old friend, you know, he was a good guy, but I think he got scared, so he didn't run up when the time was to run up, you know, when time had come to run up on stage and spill the ice. I think he got scared. Yeah, he was a 14-year-old kid. But I, you know, of course, was nuts. And so, you know, I, of course, did do it. So I ran up onto the stage and spilled the marbles. I planned it very carefully. And I quickly pulled the marbles out, spilled them on the ice. And because JDL had such a violent reputation and such a reputation of bombing and other things, you know, the ice skaters were actually afraid when I spilled the thing on the ice. They didn't know if it was a bomb. They all stepped back. They thought maybe I'm throwing a bomb at them. They were so scared. It was just marbles. And so the main male ice skater, tripped, fell, and sprained his ankle and couldn't continue the show and hurt his ankle. Anyway, the Soviet KGB guards there grabbed me, and about five or six of them grabbed me, and they gave me a good beating. You know, now I was bleeding, and blood was running down my face. And as they were leading me out, the media immediately came as they're leading me out, and they handed me over to the New York police. The New York police arrested me. And as they were leading me out, as I was being led out by the New York police, the media asked me to comment. And of course, what did I say? I said, free Soviet Jews, free Soviet Jews. Well, the blood was running down my face the same way I saw Rabbi Kahana do. I followed what our great leader had done. That was my first arrest and my first JDL mission. Thank you, Irish Zionist. And of course, it was something that made big news in New York. I mean, the headlines, Brooklyn boy disrupts ice skating. Yeah, it was big news, which was good for Soviet Jewry, which was good for the cause of Soviet Jewry. Thank you, Irish Zionist. And we now go to the great Nekama, our great friend Nekama, who writes, and I quote, why hasn't the so-called Nation of Islam been labeled an apostate or infidel group by so-called normative branches of Islam, unquote? because the so-called normative branches of Islam, first of all, agree with the hatred of Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam toward Jews and toward whites generally. They don't agree with some of the other crazy things that Farrakhan says. I mean, the Elijah Muhammad and the others, they claim that the founders of the Nation of Islam were God, that this was Allah, that Allah became a human being, and then, in Islam, you're not supposed to believe in that. But they don't condemn it because they want support among blacks, because the Nation of Islam has made Islam very popular among millions of black people, and the Muslims want support among these black people. And so they understand that the number one attraction for blacks in America is hate. Hatred toward whites, hatred toward Jews, hatred toward the people who helped black people. I mean, the Jew, nobody helped blacks as much as the Jews. And the blacks have never forgiven the Jews for it. There's a saying, no good deed goes unpunished. The crazy Jews who did all this fighting for blacks, the only thing they got for it in exchange was vicious anti-Semitism. Thank you, Nekama. And we now go to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you talk about Lecha Dodi, and if it should be sung or just recited at Shabbat, unquote. It could be, halachically, you can do either one. You can sing it or you can recite it. I love singing it. I love the melodies. I love the various melodies. And, I always sing it. But I don't think halachically you're required to sing it. I think you can recite it if you wish. But most of the time, the tradition is usually to sing it. And there are beautiful melodies that have been, triumphant melodies that have been created for it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song with great prophetic prophecy about Jerusalem and resurrection of the dead, and just magnificent. It's one of the most magnificent things that we have. Thank you, Maimonides. And we now go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, do you think de Blasio will be a one-term mayor, unquote? I hope so, but I have my doubts. I don't think so, because the city is now majority, the city's overwhelmingly non-white. The city is already, 65% non-white, maybe more. At least 65%, maybe more. And even the whites in the city are nuts. So you have a city that voted 81% for Obama. And I think they voted, I don't remember, was it 72 or 73% for de Blasio? It was over 70%. De Blasio got over 70% of the vote. And if you remember that, you remember the campaign de Blasio ran for mayor? The main part of his campaign, his wife is an admitted lesbian, an admitted black lesbian. His daughter is a drug user who said she's trying to get over it, and his son with the huge Black Panther afro was the one who was featured on his commercial, he showed his son with the huge Black Panther afro on his commercials more than he himself appeared on the commercials. I mean, that was the clearest signal he could have given to anybody what type of mayor he wanted to be. And he got over 70% of the vote running a campaign like that? That's who people want running New York City? So, I doubt that he's going to be defeated if he runs for a second term. I doubt it. I hope so, but I don't think so. I think New York City is finished. I think New York City is kaput. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And I want to thank everybody for another program that we very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.